You're listening to a 3CR podcast created in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
And welcome to another episode of Stick Together. I'm your host, James, and thanks so much for joining us on this week's episode. Stick Together acknowledges the traditional owners of the land on which we broadcast and produce. This show was produced on the lands of the Kulin Nation, and we pay our respect to their elders, both past and present. We recognise the ongoing impacts of colonisation here and across the continent. All struggles, including the struggle for workers' rights, are intertwined with that of land rights and justice for Aboriginal people. We want to recognise the ongoing impacts there and that this always was and always will be Aboriginal land. Welcome to Stick Together. It's Australia's only national radio program that focuses on your struggles at work, industrial issues and social justice. And we want to thank the Community Broadcasting Foundation for their support in allowing us to be able to put these stories to air, to tell your stories and to get the messages of resistance broadcast right across the country. You might be listening to this on a podcast or broadcast across the community radio network on your local community radio station. On this week's show, we're going to hear a couple of ASU things. We've got Delegate Jeff Thompson from the MCM to talk about their recent EBA negotiations, which have just wrapped up. And we're going to hear a couple of things from the ASU's Fair Pay campaign outside Fair Work Commission. I went down there to grab a little bit of the press conference that was going on there, and then was able to speak to a couple of the union representatives and delegates that were there. Now, before we get to that, let's hear a little bit of union news. Health professionals represented by Medical Scientists Association of Victoria will again take strike action this week. Members have been bargaining for more than 14 months and attended dozens of meetings without receiving an acceptable offer. The members rallied outside of the Department of Health in Melbourne this week in their campaign for a fair agreement. In South Australia, ASU members employed by the city of Port Adelaide Enfield have commenced industrial action for the first time in decades. Workers have rejected management's proposed agreement and are opposing provisions that could allow management's proposed agreement to move employers into completely different roles. Industrial action continues across Parks Victoria, where members of the ASU, AWU and CPSU remain in dispute with the state government over wages and classifications, with a range of work bans and workplace actions likely to take place in the coming weeks. Teachers across Victoria in both the Independent Education Union and the AEU are still involved in industrial action. The IEU will continue their campaign for sector-wide bargaining, and the AEU continue to try to negotiate a deal now, not just with the state government, but a number of the rank and file members are now in pretty fierce disagreement with the union itself about the direction to take in this campaign. So we'll be watching that as it unfolds. Queensland rail workers represented by the AMWU, ASU, ETU, RTBU remain engaged in a lengthy bargaining dispute. Unions say disruptions to rail services could have been avoided had management accepted a reasonable proposal and engaged constructively with the workers. Workers at the ICIS sugar mill in Queensland have voted to take industrial action as they pursue better wages and conditions in their EBA negotiations. AMWU and ETU members at BHP's Port Hedland operations are preparing for protected industrial action after 6 months of unsuccessful negotiations. And with results coming through from the United Workers Union election, it looks like the United for You ticket has secured control of the union's national convention. We might wait to see the full details of that as it plays out and look to get some of the members to come on the program to talk about it in more detail. But it was certainly a very heated campaign, and it is a huge union that the UW now, after a few mergers have taken place over a number of years, with around 150,000 plus members it represents. Community sector workers gathered outside the Fair Work Commission just a couple of weeks ago now in Melbourne as the next chapter of the ASU Vic TAS campaign for a fair pay. And similar actions were taking place across the country, as this is a united national campaign by the ASU to try to push for better wages and conditions for those who are under the SHADS award, which represents majority of social and community service workers. We've already seen a number of kind of actions, mass meetings, a mass action that took place across the country with workers across the sector. And this is another step in this campaign, as the ASU is pushing for a 35% pay increase for workers in the sector. Now, we're going to pick this up with some audio from the press conference. A little bit of the audio was a little bit hard to hear. There's some background noise as people walk in and out of the Fair Work Commission, but I think it's worth bearing with us as we play that audio. But after the initial part of the conference, press conference, I got some one-on-one interviews. So please enjoy.
Because recently my partner and I have started talking about getting married and having a baby. It's very exciting, but what should be a very joyful start to a new chapter in life is bittersweet, because I'm the primary breadwinner in my relationship. And I know that on the award rates as they are, I won't be able to provide for my family, and likely I will need to leave sector if things don't change. I think that community workers deserve to have our skills and contributions recognized. I think we deserve to have an opportunity to start a family if we want to. And our clients really deserve to have experienced workers who get paid well enough to stay in the sector. So I'm here saying it's time for a pay rise. It's time for a change. Thank you.
And this is James, who works in alcohol and other drugs.
Hi, my name's James and I work for the Australian Alcohol and Other Drugs Council, and I'm an ASU member. Working in the drug and alcohol sector means that we often see people at the worst times in their lives. On any given day in Victoria, there's 4,500 people who would need help for their substance use, which they can't get help for. And this is the same across Australia. So for my colleagues and I, when people finally reach us, their conditions are much more severe than they would be if they could get help earlier. And because there are similar waiting lists across all the social sectors, people can't get help for their mental health, they have unresolved trauma, they can't get support for their disability, they have insecure housing, and they're stuck in violent relationships. So they use substances to cope. And when they arrive at a drug and alcohol service, our role is to not just treat their substance use, but to fix the whole other range of issues that are exacerbating their substance use and the harms that come from it. So the role of an AOD worker then, it becomes one of managing risk of overdose and risk of death. And there's nowhere else for us to escalate the care to. We are it. I've personally responded to overdoses that were a consequence of someone not being able to get help for their mental health or find secure housing. And this is a responsibility that sits on the shoulders of some of the lowest paid workers in Australia. Myself and my colleagues are skilled workers doing complex work. We're social workers, we're counsellors, and we're certificate holders. And we do this work not for money, but because we'll often have our own lived experience. Our own lived experience of substance use, or we've seen our friends and family members struggle with their own substance use. So today I've travelled 3 hours by train from the country to tell you what this wage value case means to workers like me. This is a chance for our expertise, our experience and our complex care skills to be properly reflected in the award. It would mean that we don't have to make the choice between doing the work that we're passionate about and leaving the sector for more secure, less stressful and better paid work. And I fully support the ASU award.
Now we're just going to hear from Philippa Walk, who's the Assistant Secretary of the ASU in Victoria and Tasmania.
We've all just heard from these amazing workers just how incredible the work that they do is. Too often, however, it's unseen and invisible. Skill complexity, the diversity of the sector, it is really important that this work is recognised. Over the last decade or more, the work has changed significantly and it's time for the pay to change to reflect that.
Thank you. I don't think we've got anyone else to ask a question.
I'll ask a few of us, right?
Yeah, sure.
Could you speak to how the nature of work has changed in recent years?
Yeah, sure. So since 2012, there have been a range of Royal Commissions, Commissions of Inquiry, new regulations put into place. And so not only are we seeing demand and the work becoming more challenging and demanding, we are seeing workers being required to do more training, get more qualifications, and work to higher standards than previously.
And why 35%?
Because that's what we think they're worth. If you look at recent cases and outcomes and wage outcomes that have occurred, I think in the last sort of five or six decisions, we've seen wage increases of between 25 and 35% for workers like in the care sector, on the Health Professionals Award, on the dental assistants under the Aboriginal Health Award, teachers and nurses, and our estimation is that that's the way in which, that's how much these workers are currently underpaid.
Could you speak, sorry for all the questions, could you speak to the importance of retention in the industry and how significant these turnovers have become?
Yeah, well, you don't have to be a mathematician to see that if you need to grow the workforce by more than 100,000 workers just to meet existing demand, and you've got workers who are fleeing the industry because they cannot afford to do the jobs anymore, that you're going to have a crisis. And so what we are at real risk of is having services that, or people who can't get the services they need in communities. So that might be homeless people who can't get the support they need. Or that might be kids who are being abused or don't have a safe place to call home, not able to get the support they need. And we say that's not good enough. We say that we need to value this work, and just because the people are passionate and love what they do, it's not fair not to pay them enough to do the work.
And then where to from here? What are the next steps?
So we filed the application today, and we expect that there'll be a hearing in the coming weeks in the Fair Work Commission to set up the timetable for the case. We think the case will run over a few months. We'll certainly have 80 to 100 worker witnesses coming and giving testimony to the ways in which their work has changed. No doubt there'll be other parties who want to participate in that, and we'll put the evidence forward and make our case to the Commission and await the decision.
So we just heard some of the members speak about what the case would mean. I guess we just wanted to hear a little bit more about how this came about and what the kind of next steps are going to look like for members across the sector.
Yeah. Well, for too long, workers in community and disability services have not been paid enough for the very demanding and challenging and highly skilled work that they do. Mm-hmm. And today is the day we draw a line in the sand and we say enough of that, and we're going to win the wage rises that these workers deserve.
And I guess, a lot of the press and things that the unions put out is kind of looking back at the 2012 case, and that was a huge win for the sector, but I think it kind of really dramatically changed how the sector was able to kind of organize and how people were able to stay within the sector itself. But I guess from that there's a lot of professionalization of the sector as well, and does that really come to where that kind of continued expectation for workers is not really meeting the demand for where our wages and conditions are at?
Yeah, I think there's been a lot of change in the way that the work is being required to be performed by governments who procure the work, and that's putting a lot more pressure on services and on the workforce, but without the pay being given to match that. So workers are expected to have qualifications, but they're not being paid the wages of workers who have qualifications, and they have accreditation and a whole range of things they have to go through, and they're not being paid for that. And if you're in that situation, you can love the work you do so much, but it's not fair to expect you to do that just because you love the work. It's not fair not to pay people enough because they're good people. And so that's why we're calling for this wage increase that properly recognises the absolutely invaluable contributions that these workers are making to keeping our communities together and making sure people don't fall through the cracks.
And we're here at the Fair Work Commission, which is not necessarily always a friend of workers. What are we kind of expecting with a response from, I guess, the Fair Work Commission and then, some of the funding bodies, which is, principally the government in essence, and, the kind of different avenues of not-for-profits that they're funded, but that funding basically comes from the government as well.
Yeah, so we've had some really good early discussions with the government, but obviously there is a long way to go.
Yep.
And that is why ASU members are organising in their workplaces
and are planning a campaign that's going to be in their workplaces, getting their employers on board, but also on the streets, getting the government on board, because without the government support, we won't be able to win the wage rises that these workers deserve.
And I guess we have in Victoria a state election coming up. You know, what kind of role do you think that can play in trying to get, potentially the Labor government to help support this case?
Well, we'll be engaging with governments over the next few months about what the wage rises look like and how they could fund that, and seeking commitments from them to fund that. But obviously, Labor governments come and say that they support pay equity for feminised workforces, and they support decent wages and conditions for workers. And so we do expect them to put their money where their mouth is, and we'll be campaigning hard to make sure that's the case.
Yeah, great. And thanks. Good luck with the campaign.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jane. Did you want to maybe just tell us a little bit about what your role is and what kind of work that you do to start things off?
Yeah, so I work in the alcohol and other drugs sector, and I work for the national peak body for the, we represent the alcohol and drugs sector at the national level.
Yeah. And what do you think, organising, for this kind of campaign, what would that look like in your workplace?
I think it's really just getting out and talking to a lot of the workers across Australia. One of the challenges with drug and alcohol work is that we're so busy. Mm-hmm. We're flat out, our waiting lists are really long. So the idea of doing extra things and organising your workplace is often, we'll get to that when we can. Mm-hmm. So I think it's the responsibility of, I guess, people like me in more strategic project type roles to be out there talking to workers on the ground, the people who are at the coalface every day, and saying that we can organise and get a better result for ourselves and our colleagues.
Yeah, and I guess, that kind of role of a delegate within the workplace can be challenging, and finding different ways to integrate that into your own work.
Yeah.
Have you found that this is a way that you've been able to engage members or to talk to other colleagues about joining the union?
Yeah, through our national networks. But I'm in a fortunate position that we've got in national networks and can talk to people in all different types, in all different states and jurisdictions. So that's been a really useful avenue for me to speak through these national networks and raise these issues with my colleagues, and then enable them to have those same conversations in their workplaces. I think the Shad's case that we were involved with was a really good example of that. I don't think there was a huge amount of knowledge about the work that was happening around the review of the Shads and the gender undervaluation, but through my role I was able to really present why this is important for the AOD sector and why we need to get involved, and we had a really good response from our members in putting in witness statements and supporting what was the final outcome.
And we've seen what is about to be in workers' pockets, a 4.75% wage increase. Mm. And I think that speaking to a lot of workers, they're pretty excited about that. Mm. Can only imagine what kind of real increase of 35% or somewhere around that would actually mean.
Absolutely. I mean, no, I don't think anyone would knock back for an extra 4% in the pay packet, but when CPI and inflation is nipping at the heels of that pay increase, I think we can do better, and hopefully this 35% ask, we can get something close to that, if not the full thing.
Yep, great. Thanks, Jan.
Thanks.
And we go out of the interviews there at the Fair Work Commission, and now joined by another ASU delegate, Jeff Thompson from Melbourne City Mission, to hear about the EBA campaign that you've been involved in.
Hey, Jeff. Thanks for joining us on the show today. Jeff is an ASU delegate at Melbourne City Mission, and Melbourne City Mission has just voted in for their enterprise agreement. So Jeff was hoping you could give us a little bit of a rundown about where things are at and how we got to this agreement.
Yeah, thanks for having me, James. So when I started at Melbourne City Mission approximately 20 months ago, the EBA, the agreement had expired, and myself and the other delegates decided it was time to bargain for a new agreement. So we contacted management through the ASU, and that process began. It turned out to be quite a long process and lots of back and forth, and through the hard work of the delegates and the members, we were able to continue to keep negotiations open, and essentially it came down to the members wanting 5 days of extra leave for well-being. The Melbourne City Mission management were only willing to give us two, so at which point the members decided to vote for industrial action, you know, and our PABO, and it passed, and we were set to take industrial action. However, as part of that process, we had to attend the Fair Work Commission and have mediation with Melbourne City Mission and the Fair Work Commissioner. During that process, the delegates that attended were able to provide some of their, you know, firsthand experience of the difficulties and complex clients that we deal with, and they're able to communicate, you know, just the type of complex work we do. And through that process, the commissioner, I guess, you know, appeared to support our cause, and Melbourne City Mission came back and offered us an extra week's leave, which, along with, you know, some other of the points we were after, which was a $750 sign-on bonus, pay rise, and things of that nature. And we took it back to members, and it was just recently voted up.
And I guess, you know, kind of shows that while, you know, there's just a few points you've raised there about things that the members were kind of really pushing hard for, that without that kind of work of the union, the delegates, members, that, you know, probably would have got an inferior enterprise agreement, and maybe shows the kind of value of having active union within your workplace.
Yeah, absolutely. I think when we started the process, the membership was quite low. I'm not sure really what the figures were, but the delegates, including yourself, we all did a lot of hard work to really gain that trust with the workplace and our colleagues, and build the membership, you know, explaining what unions do, the value of unions in the workplace. And through that, you know, our membership really, really, you know, gained a lot of numbers. And I think through all that hard work of the delegates, myself, yourself included, growing that membership, when we did decide to continue to fight for what we wanted through the industrial action, I think it was noticed a lot more with the strong membership increase from the time we started the bargaining process to the time that we took the vote for industrial action. That increase in membership really supported our cause, and I think ultimately helped us win the wins that we got.
And I think as well, it probably shows the positive nature of having an enterprise agreement. And even, you know, if, you know, you might always be hoping to get more and negotiation like that. A lot of workplaces within the sector don't have enterprise agreements and are just relying on the SHADS award. And we have seen a recent wage increase that's going to help people that are on the award. But having any kind of agreement, it enshrines certain things within your workplace, and there's really like a bigger scope to kind of push for more things that you can, whether that's more leave or entitlements in different ways, that it really kind of shows the benefit of that.
Absolutely. I think, a lot of workplaces rely on, in our case, in our sector, the SHADS award, which, you know, guarantees certain entitlements, but really that's the bare minimum of what we're entitled to. So, you know, organizing within the workplace, working within the union, and getting an EBA in place really builds off that bare minimum of the award. So yeah, just as you said, you know, sticking together, fighting as a membership and as a union, really helps you build and enshrine some of those hard-fought wins that we had, such as the extra week leave, 5 weeks annual leave, pay increases, better conditions, above the award. And you know, it puts you in as a workplace and as a union in a good place for the next EBA to build off that and further your workplace rights and entitlements. Because if you're just relying on the ward, that's the bare minimum.
And as well, on the show today, we're hearing from people from the ASU, both staff from within the ASU and some other workers within the sector, about the campaign just launched from the ASU across the kind of changing the SHADS award, changing the classification, and, you know, calling for a big pay increase across the sector. Can you maybe speak a little bit about like what that might mean for yourself and other people working in the sector?
Absolutely. I think the last time that the SHADS award had any kind of movement or big pay increase was in 2013, 2011, around then.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so it's been quite a long time since we've had a, you know, review of the Shads Award, and the workplace has changed. Just the complexities of our work have gone through the roof. You know, we're dealing with more complex clients with multiple support requirements, and often wearing many hats in our roles. You know, in our case, we're housing workers, but we're also, you know, mental health workers, alcohol and other drug workers, family violence workers. So the complex nature of our work has increased, and, you know, a review and then a pay increase, I think, is long overdue. And I think, you know, certainly within the cost of living and the situation that we're in right now, it would mean quite a lot for us as workers. We value the work we do. We do it because we love it, but we should also be paid fairly and accurately for the hard work we do. And I think that's what this campaign is about. People do this job because they love it, but they also do it because they need to get paid, and they should be paid at what they're valued. And the complex nature of our work has increased since the last time. And, you know, our award, the Shads Award, should reflect that.
Absolutely. Thanks, Jeff. Thanks for being on the show.
Thank you.
And that was another episode of Stick Together. Thanks so much for joining us on this week's show. I've been James, and thank you to the ASU for allowing the interviews with the organizers and members, delegates there. Thanks to Jeff from MCM. Thank you to the Community Broadcasting Foundation for your support in putting together this program. And thank you to you for listening to the show. If you want to hear any other of episodes of this program, you can go to the Stick Together 3CR website, or just check out wherever you normally listen to podcasts. I've been James. Thanks so much for joining us on today's show. Remember, wherever you are, whatever you do, there's a union for you. Until next time, stick together.
Now, I'm going to finish out this show with a song. And just before we do that, I want to thank Emmeline, Philippa, James, and Jeff. Thank you so much for being on the show. And I'm going to end the show with a song. Thanks so much for listening. This song is by Carsey Blanton. It's from the album Everything Is Great, released earlier this year. And this song is called Hoist the Guillotine. It goes out to Elon Musk. Until next time, stick together.
In the morning when I spread my oaky butter, I pretend I'm not an angry sour dude. By the time I eat my taters, I'm a brazen alligator, lackadaisically devolving in my mood. Haphazardly, I drove to Tallahassee, specifically to murder Elon Musk. But my aging engine angrily exploded, for I got there, now my life feels like a smoking wicker husk. I'm gonna hoist that guillotine, we gotta get him off the scene. Them billionaires ain't worth a hill of beans. I commandeered a mule to California, and squinting in the hazy, sagey bright, caught a sailboaty notion to proceed along the ocean with the lurid fires raging to my right. At Menlo Park we took on reinforcements, an awe-inspiring cavalry of nerds. And along with Tilda Swinton and some inmates from San Quentin, went to settle our accounts with Zuckerberg. We're gonna hoist that guillotine, we gotta get him off the scene. Them billionaires ain't worth a hill of beans.
I'll take it, Sheriff.
These cumbersome, incalculable failures, these grifters who have hitched us to a screen. I would pay a million pesos to dispatch old Jeffrey Bezos or eject old Daniel Ek into a stream. We're gonna hoist that guillotine, we gotta get them off the scene. Them billionaires ain't worth a hill of beans. We gotta get them off the scene. Them billionaires ain't worth a hill of beans. Them billionaires ain't worth a hill of beans. Them billionaires ain't worth a hill of beans.
Beans. I mean, we never had a song that just ended beans.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.